On today's programme, aviation devastation, shock as regional airline Stobart Air collapses. Pole position, when did the practice of sending incognito posters to our doors really stop? How should our FDI business model change if companies allow workers to be based abroad? As thoughts turn to foreign holidays, will we be ready to roll out the EU digital COVID cert? And should victims of the MiCA scandal be entitled to 100% redress? All that and more coming up after the news with Susan Jackson. Thanks, Susan. Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. My panel today, Sean Fleming, Fianna Fáil TD for Laois and Minister of State for Financial Services, Credit Unions and Insurance. Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin spokesperson on Enterprise, Trade and Employment. Kino Callan, Social Democrats TD for Dublin Bay North and spokesperson on Housing. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie or you can tweet to saturday@saturdayrte. Now, as you heard there in the bulletin, Aer Lingus regional flights operated by Stobart Air have been cancelled with immediate effect after Stobart Air announced it has ceased operations. I'm joined now by Ashley Connolly, National Secretary at FORSA, which represents cabin crew, and by Evan Cullen, President of the Airline Pilots Association, IALPA. Ashley, if I can go to you first, did you have any idea that Stobart Air were about to make this announcement this morning?
Katie, I can absolutely say neither myself nor any of my members were expecting of this announcement, that they received an email after midnight which informed them of the decision that the company were now entering into liquidation. It is having the most devastating impact on our members, and I have been in touch with most of them throughout the morning. But I can absolutely say this was unexpected.
But you had you not been working with Stobart, you know, trying to navigate their path out through this pandemic?
I've been working very closely with Stobart over the last 18 months in relation to, and I can say, and I must stress, that Stobart Air were healthy when we went into this pandemic. It was a healthy company. It was also looking at expanding its routes from some of its bases in the island of Ireland. And that was as recent as the last couple of weeks. But there is no doubt the impact of this pandemic on the aviation sector. This is yet another casualty of a lack of action, as we see it at this stage. The government, we call on them, there is a real need for urgent action. The time has passed. Each week we are seeing further announcements being made. What we have seen is the impact of Stobart Air going into liquidation, our connectivity into the UK, our public service obligation flights, the impact it will have on Kerry Airport, on Donegal Airport, and we've recently seen the announcements on Shannon Airport. All of this needs urgent action. I cannot stress enough the devastation that this has had on our members. A lot who I know quite personally and have gotten to know over the last few years, who have given decades of service to the aviation industry. They previously would have worked for Air Arran. These are long-serving, experienced staff who woke up this morning to the most devastating of news.
Can I bring you in, Evan Cullen? You've been warning the government for some time that something like this was in the offing.
Regrettably, Katie, the loss of these 480 jobs comes on top of the hundreds in Shannon, the layoffs in Cork, but also the people who lost their jobs in CityJet this time last year. What we're seeing now is the result of a failed government policy. What we're seeing now is that the inaction of the government in conflict with other governments on their lack of support for the industry that they have shut down. It is the government policy that is destroying this industry. The ongoing debate about antigen testing, when every other country has settled that debate long before now, is symptomatic of a government that's captured by NPHET and that is going to cost even more jobs. This is only the tip of the iceberg, Katie. There will be thousands of layoffs this winter in the aviation sector if this government does not act.
And just to remind people, Evan, you, of course, represent pilots. How many pilots will be affected by this news today?
There's approximately 120 pilots there in Stobart there. But also, we've lost an awful lot of pilots in the other airlines as well. And we can't forget those people, all of the people in CityJet who were based in Ireland when they pulled out and effectively moved their operations to Scandinavia.
OK, I'll just stay with us there. I want to put what you said and what Ashley has been saying to Sean Fleming here. you know, they're very clear. This is a consequence of government action and inaction.
Yeah, first of all, I think everybody is shocked this morning to hear the news, and it's devastating news for everybody in Stobart. And it's not a question, is there a wind-down situation? They've stopped their flights this morning. So the shock and the speed of the decision by Stobart is shocking. A number of issues have been mentioned there. The Donegal, Kerry routes in and out of Dublin, there's a public service obligation. And I know first thing Monday morning, the Department of Transport officials will be working to get that reinstated as quickly as possible. They'll probably have to go through some emergency tendering procedure agreed with the EU, but the obligation is to get that in straight away. The other issue I do want to say is for the passengers now, where Stobart was flying in and out of routes in England, Edinburgh and other places like that from Dublin, the connectivity is still there. There are other airlines will be able to carry those people. Aer Lingus is still operating in most of those areas. The only area I'm not sure of this morning is flights emanating from Belfast heading to the UK. We're not quite clear on that, and the Northern Ireland authorities will have to deal with that. But for the staff, this is devastating news, with the company going into liquidation.
Okay, would you respond to what Evan Cullen and Ashley Connolly are saying there in relation to the government's role in this?
Yeah, look, I understand that, and I wouldn't want to have any argument with anyone this morning, you know, when there's such bad news being delivered to all the people they represent. What I will say is, I think airlines across the world have difficulties. You know, there's job losses in the biggest airlines right across Europe, despite all the government subsidies. People can say other countries have received big subsidies from their government. They have, but they've lost thousands of jobs as well. People are not as inclined to travel this year, even when all the restrictions and we have the digital certificates in place. People will be a little bit slow, and I think the industry knows it's going to take a couple of years for it to get back to the capacity it operated on prior to COVID. And people, even if there are no restrictions on travel, a lot of people will just wait another year before they actually get on a plane to go abroad. And that is going to be, and the last point I will say is, this is definitely, not just in Ireland or across the world, one of the sectors of the economy worldwide that has been specifically hit hardest by COVID, and that's something the government, both in Ireland and in Europe, will have to look at.
Okay. Ashley, do you want to respond to that?
Well, what I will say back is that since last July, we've seen three published reports. The first one from the Department of Transport, the second one from the Joint Committee, and then the third one from the industries, the National Civil Aviation Development Forum. But what we're not seeing is the action and the recommendations. From Air Members' perspective, they are very angry with the government. They believe that there has been a lack of political leadership. But also, they believe that these reports are welcomed. Every time a report is published, it is welcomed by all stakeholders. But what we're not seeing is a move by the political parties to implement these recommendations. And yes, we're very aware that aviation will be the last to recover. We have been stating it now for since last May. We have called for social dialogue to engage all stakeholders to ensure that we can support this industry from now and into the future. But what we have to decide is the impact temporary or is the impact permanent? And our fear is that we have seen nothing in what may be coming down the track unless we see real action as a matter of urgency.
Evan Cullen?
Unfortunately, the comments of Deputy Fleming and also the statement of the Department of Transport just demonstrates once again how removed they are from the reality of what's going on here. We need direct intervention, just like in Germany, Spain, Italy and France and across the US. We also need to put an end to this debate on antigen testing. IALPA has invited Professor Moyne of Harvard to a conference to discuss rapid antigen testing. We have also invited senior members of NEFIT to join in that discussion, because we want to hear exactly the rationale for the government's advice on refusing to implement antigen testing that is implemented in almost every jurisdiction in Europe. It is extraordinary that this government cynically allows vaccinated people to fly, but their children can't fly, and has done everything possible cynically to prevent the reopening of aviation in July, despite the comments of the deputy here today.
Okay, I don't know. Is that Is Ashley Connolly still with us? Just, I'm going to put that issue of antigen testing. You know, just, but I just wanted to get one raise one last issue in relation to the workers here and redundancy measures for them. Ashley,
thank you, Kate. And I suppose we will be fighting tooth and nail for our members to receive the best outcome following this announcement. But we are very well aware that, as you know, the unions have been calling for action in terms of maximising employment protections when people find themselves in a situation. What we have had is, from the time of Cleary's to the recent debacle and what we've seen in terms of the Debenhams workers, we need urgent action to ensure that there is maximum protections for people in a liquidated situation, that they are moved up in the line of priority. So, but we will be engaging with our members and we will be fighting tooth and nail to ensure they get the best outcome from this most tragic of announcements.
Okay. I want to bring the panel in then. Louise.
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, Katie, you've got to be thinking about the people. Over 400 people getting absolutely devastating news this morning at the absolute worst possible time. They're not just numbers, they're not just statistics, they're people with families, with bills, and they are facing a very uncertain future. The representatives of the aviation industry and of the workers in the aviation industry have been very clear, as has Sinn Féin through our transport spokesperson, Darren O'Rourke, in relation to what is needed. And Ashley made the point there, and she's right, we're coming down with reports. They know exactly what it is that needs to be done, but they have been reluctant to do it. So what we have this morning is a statement from the Minister for Transport where he describes the supports that are available. All of those supports are available to all industries. There were no specific supports for aviation. So when the government and their representatives in both the Dáil and the Shannon cry crocodile tears over job losses, they need to look very hard at what it is that has caused those job losses and the failure to put in place a plan. When plans have been presented to them. So, I mean, we're coming up to the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary of the Aviation Task Force report, 12 recommendations, only two of which have even been implemented. So it's not like there's not a roadmap. It's not like the information isn't there. They have the information. They know what they need to do. They haven't done it. And so we have arrived at the inevitable place now where there's job losses. What we need to see is urgent action in relation to, and Ashley said right when she says urgent action, yes, it'll be late even if it happens now, but it is urgent. Okay. We need to see a plan for reopening aviation safely and a plan to support the aviation sector specifically, which is what Sinn Féin have been calling for since the start of this pandemic. We need to see that, and we need to see the Minister for Transport stop his hands-off approach, because if you talk to people in the sector, Katie, and I do every day of the week, they will tell you that there is a lack of interest on the part of this government in saving the aviation sector. Our connectivity is important, but just talking about 140,000 jobs are also important too.
I do want to bring in, we have travel journalist Owen Corry on the line. Good afternoon, Owen.
Afternoon, Katie.
Owen, a lot of people are really concerned, particularly about those PSO routes going with this news this morning. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel in terms of what might be done to save those routes?
Yeah, there's a few complicated factors in this collapse this morning. One of them is the PCO routes, which may have to be re-tendered, and that may have to be an expedited process. Now, there are other airlines that might pick that up. Aer Lingus, in the meantime, this is, you know, not really an Aer Lingus problem. It's something that subcontracted these routes out to Stobart Air. So they will be in the business of finding another carrier to pick up those routes. It's a time when there's a lot of these sort of aircraft, turboprop aircraft, a lot of airlines looking for this sort of business. So in a way, finding another carrier to step in at short notice could be a much easier process than it would have been 18 months ago. The other big issue is that these routes, this contract was due to run out, not at the end of this year, but the end of next year. And the airline, which is to take it over, being set up by Conor McCarthy, Emerald, there is a question, you know, it's, he's obviously, instead of having 18 months to put this together, will he be able to expedite that process and pick up the Aer Lingus regional route? So a lot of questions out of what's happened this morning. And to be quite honest, the Stobart story over the last 2 years has just been a series of riddles and puzzles and conflicts, and they appear to have run out of runway just because of that difficulty of getting investment. While COVID is the heart of this story, the problems about this go back to before COVID.
Okay. Thanks, Katie, for that, Owen. I just want to bring Cian O'Callaghan. Cian.
Yeah, and I think certainly the government, the way they've talked about this has been as if it's a kind of hands-off approach, as if they're a commentator to this. And it's the government is recognising that aviation has been the hardest hit, one of the hardest hit sectors. But we don't have the specific supports for the aviation sector. We haven't had the implementation of the task force on aviation's most of its recommendations. And it's not good enough to say, oh, there's been job losses in other European countries. We need to have action now to get these routes restored and to get our regional connectivity back. The economic impact of that, you know, in terms of tourism and other economic ties is huge, and that has to be addressed very, very urgently.
Okay, a lot of questions to answer for you there, yeah. Sean Fleming.
I'll be succinct as I can. First of all, I think, Ashley, I think it was said, we do need a social dialogue for this area, and that's very important. There will be one or two or three key sectors when we come out of COVID, we'll have problems way worse than other sectors. And I think the government has to take a targeted approach on those.
But, you know, the government set up a task force,
which
produced a report.
Yeah.
And where was the implementation?
Well, you know, we're living through COVID. You know, that's the reason why you don't have the implementation of all these things. And another thing, just to put on the record, Owen came on and said there was issues with Stobart before COVID. We know there was back a while ago, they were seeking new owners. The owners wanted to dispose of the company, whereas the first speaker said, it was a great company before COVID. Some of what has been said has not been fully accurate here. And it's important. And there were issues with Stobart beforehand. Stobart are the people who get the cheque, if you like, from the Irish Exchequer for the public service obligation.
This isn't the only aviation failure that has come upon us in the last number of weeks. There's a pattern here. This is an industry that is teetering on the edge.
Yes, and if you're in the United States, the exact same conversation has been held in the United States with several regional airline operators in the United States as well. So look, COVID is affecting this area worldwide. It's not just an Irish issue here. And I think people understand that. And I think once we get, you know, a seamless travel back between Ireland and England and we get the digital certificate, people will be able to move much more freely at that point.
Well, you'll need antigen testing to do that, Sean. And no disrespect now, but you're not in government in America. You're in government here. So really, the people who are losing their jobs, they want to know what plan is in place. Are you going to protect their redundancy? Are we going to have another Debenhams? Can't allow that to happen. But the 140,000 people from whose jobs depend on aviation want to hear from you that the government is going to embrace antigen testing, is going to support the industry
recover. I'm after saying here there needs to be social dialogue with everybody in this particular sector. I've just said that. And to say you shouldn't talk about what's happening in other countries. Everybody else has mentioned what's happening in other countries, and I'm just agreeing it's a worldwide issue.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break, but we'll be back with the views of Ryanair Chief Executive Michael O'Leary after these.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. Ryanair Chief Executive Michael O'Leary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Good. Were you surprised at this news from Stobart Air?
I think neither we nor the Irish aviation industry was surprised. It's inevitable, and there's going to be more failures, sadly, that are entirely due to this government's complete mismanagement of the COVID recovery situation. The biggest issue for Stobart Air, as it is for Aer Lingus and for Ryanair, is that this government and Transport Minister Eamon Ryan, we have the UK common travel area is closed. They hide behind the Indian variant in the UK, yet people can drive across the border with Northern Ireland with no restrictions whatsoever. And what's remarkable is the UK will allow Irish people into the UK without restrictions because we're 40% vaccinated. But we won't allow people to come back from the UK despite the fact that the UK has 60% of its entire population vaccinated. It is nothing other than an attempt by the government and NEFET to keep us locked down far after there is any medical need to keep this country locked down.
Well, that's your view, Michael O'Leary. You are not a medical expert. And the government have been quite clear at all times that they were operating on public health advice, and all decisions were taken in the interests of public health.
That's great. I'm glad you explained that, Katie. But, I mean, it would be helpful if RT would get somebody on to explain in the interest of public health why people from the north can travel across the border with no restrictions, yet we require people coming in here from the UK to have a negative PCR certificate, despite the fact they have exactly the same level of vaccination, that they're coming from exactly the same country.
But you know yourself that there are... difficulties of closing the border with the north. So just because it is impossible or difficult to do one thing, it does not mean we should leave all borders open.
But what's the difficulty with the common traveller with the UK? The British welcome Irish visitors in there with our 40%
vaccinations have the same level.
Without restrictions. Could you let me finish the point, please? We won't allow more vaccinated UK visitors to travel to Ireland on Stobart, Aer Lingus and Ryanair services, but we allow exactly the same citizens to travel across the north, the border with the north. So I fully accept it's a political problem, but then please don't tell me that it's a public health issue, because it clearly isn't. The aviation industry in this country is on its knees. There's going to be more failures because, despite the success of our vaccination program, we continually refuse to allow the British visitors to travel over here, despite the fact that they're more vaccinated than we are. And we continue to fail to roll out the EU Digital Green Cert, which can be rolled out on Monday morning for vaccinated Irish citizens, but our government won't roll it out.
But Michael O'Leary, you will be across, I'm sure, all developments in the pandemic in the UK, and you will see what's happening there in relation to the Delta variant.
The Delta variant has increased the case numbers, that we absolutely accept. It hasn't increased serious illness, it hasn't increased hospitalizations, and thankfully it hasn't increased morbidity. But the Delta variant in the UK is exactly the same Delta variant as you have in the north, and we can't get the Transport Minister, Eamon Ryan, to explain why we allow UK citizens to travel over the border from the north with no restrictions, but we ban them from flying in here from the mainland UK. There is no medical basis for that. It's a political decision to keep us locked, that this country locked down, and to prevent UK visitors coming here, despite the fact that many of them are Irish citizens.
So again, and I'm going to say it again, they are acting on advice that they have been given to them from NPHET.
I wish you'd stop actually making up that excuse, Katie, because it's simply not true. They get exactly the same advice from NPHET on UK citizens coming here from Northern Ireland and UK citizens coming here from the UK. UK citizens coming here from the UK are more vaccinated than we are. They have 80% of their adult population vaccinated.
In many cases,
with just one dose of vaccination. We
require
those vaccinated UK citizens to have a negative PCR test when they come here. I have to go to London on Wednesday to do a press event. I'm thankfully vaccinated, being the age of 60. I have all my vaccinations done. I can travel freely to London on Wednesday, but to come back into this country, I have to get a negative PCR test on Monday, despite the fact that I'm vaccinated. Now, please explain to me, or ask Transport Minister Ryan, instead of issuing another vacuous statement, why do Irish vaccinated citizens who want to travel to the UK have to get a negative PCR test coming home? And equally the same, if we're vaccinated here in Ireland and we want to travel to Europe, why do we have to get a negative PCR test coming home? What exactly is the medical evidence for that? What's the NPHET advice on that? It is completely made up rubbish, and that's why the aviation industry in this country is on its knees. I've heard Sean Fleming repeatedly say it's the same in Europe, it's the same in America, and it's the same in Asia. It isn't. The American aviation is back to pre-COVID levels. Asian aviation is back to pre-COVID levels. And on the continent of Europe within the Schengen area, they have removed most, if not all, of the travel restrictions with the same level of vaccinations as we have in Ireland.
And we
cannot get a minister in this country, Minister Ryan, the useless transport minister, nor Minister Varadkar, nor our Taoiseach Micheál Martin, to explain why they're keeping this country locked down, despite the fact that they let unlimited UK visitors in here across the Northern Ireland border.
Can I ask you, in relation to the supports that are now required or needed to maintain the aviation sector here?
The support the aviation sector needs in this country is a functioning transport minister immediately restore the UK CTA so that at least we can welcome vaccinated UK visitors in here. That would actually prop up a lot of the Stobart, Aer Lingus and Ryanair operations. It would also prop up our regional airports. And all it requires is to simply remove the CTA restriction. The UK adult population is 80% vaccinated, and yet we won't allow them in here to this country during the peak of the tourism season. I know we keep talking about the Irish will take their staycations in the south and on the west coast, but the hotels in Dublin are empty. The tourism industry in Dublin is empty because we won't allow vaccinated UK visitors to fly here from the UK, despite the fact that we'll allow them to travel unrestricted across the border with Northern Ireland.
Just in relation to that figure,
Do
you've repeatedly mentioned there that 80% of the UK population has adult population has been vaccinated. Many of those may have got their first dose, and many of them are waiting for their second dose because of that long gap that they put in place in the UK. And we know that you only have 33% protection against the Delta variant with one dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine.
And yes, the UK allows Irish citizens to travel to the UK without restriction, despite the fact that in Ireland we are 40% of our total population has received the first dose. We won't reciprocate under the common travel area, despite the fact that the UK is 60% has received first dose. And I keep making the point, while you keep defending the NPHET and government mismanagement, why have we a different policy to UK citizens in the north of Ireland who can travel across the border with no restriction, but we ban UK visitors, even if they're vaccinated? I mean, even the vaccinated ones, Katie, are not allowed to fly here without getting a completely useless negative PCR test. And we wonder why aviation is on its knees. So what support does our industry need? We need a functioning transport minister, one who hasn't sat on an action plan since the 20th of July last year, near 11 months, with absolutely no action. Himself, he's great for issuing meaningless statements this morning. We haven't in Ryanair received a call from Eamon Ryan today. We could step into the breach with Stobart.
We've already
called Aer Lingus this morning offering to take stranded passengers on our flights from Dublin to Glasgow, Edinburgh and Birmingham. But would the Transport Minister know where we are or call somebody or pick up the phone? No, he'd just issue a useless statement with more vacuous pledges of action next week or next Monday.
What are the options for those routes, Michael?
Well, most of the routes between Ireland and the UK are already operated by Ryanair. We've been in contact with Aer Lingus this morning. We've offered to take any stranded passengers on our flights from Dublin to Manchester, Glasgow, Edinburgh in the coming days. We would happily work with Aer Lingus to accommodate the any passenger bookings they have over the next couple of months. So the people operating between Ireland and the UK, I'm sure, will be reaccommodated because Ryanair will work with Aer Lingus. On the short-haul domestic routes, Kerry, those PSO routes, those passengers can transfer to trains or to buses, so at least they're not going to be stranded. The immediate priority must be the stranded passengers in Dublin who want to get home to the UK, and the stranded passengers in the UK who cannot now get back to Dublin because of the collapse of Stobart. But the Stobart has collapsed because of the CTA mismanagement by Eamon Ryan and this government.
Okay. We leave that there. Many thanks for
joining
us with that
good
reaction
to
today, Michael O'Leary. Do you want to respond to that, Sean
Fleming? I'll just say briefly, first of all, I think a lot of Irish people have great regard for him as an entrepreneur, as a businessman, and the number of people he's employed and where he brought the industry, people being able to travel around the world, which we couldn't do before. So I have great regard for him. However, it's the first time I've ever heard anybody in a single interview on 8 separate occasions raising the issue about Irish people being allowed across the border between Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. I've never heard of it in my life. That being said, as part of this debate, as if there's something wrong with that. I know he's making the point you should be allowed to come from London, but he doesn't allow people. He seems to be highlighting the fact that you can go from Newry to Drogheda. 8 times in the short interview, he raised that issue. I don't believe he thinks we should close the border, but he certainly...
No, he thinks we should open up the other.
But he shouldn't be using the history of Ireland to make his commercial point on this issue. And the last thing I will say, just to get his own facts right, he said people can take the trains from the region. There is no train to Donegal, and anybody who knows anything knows there's no train to Donegal. So he's not right.
Okay, but
that.
The main point he's making is that government inaction led us to where we are today with this.
No. COVID led us to where we are today. So if people want to blame what's the cause of all these problems, it's because of COVID, it's because of the Delta variation, it's because of the COVID virus around the world. It is not the fault of governments. Governments are trying to ameliorate the problem as best we can, with 40 billion of taxpayers' money we've borrowed, we will have to be paid back for all the support. So the government is doing mighty and main work to get this done, and COVID is the problem, not the government.
I think, Louise, you'd have to accept the government position on this, that, you know, despite what Michael O'Leary might say, that there was, you know, real public health reasons for making decisions they made in terms of routes and the common travel area.
Yeah, there's no public health reason for ignoring the reports that have repeatedly been done into the aviation sector. There's no public health reason for ignoring the fact that aviation needs a recovery plan. So when we talk about connectivity and flights between here and London, say, for example, that would be an ideal opportunity to pilot antigen testing. It's something that my colleague Darren O'Rourke has been calling for since last October. So I think what people in aviation want to see is some action from the government, not that they will just shrug their shoulders and say this is COVID's fault or it's the same as another country. I think what they want to hear is, how are the government going to put the aviation recovery plan into practice? They have all the plans, so they really need to start by piloting antigen testing on short haul flights. I think that can happen. That should have happened already, okay, but that could happen very quickly, okay, and needs to be done.
Okay, just before we leave this, I want to bring it back in, Eoin Corey, just for people who may have been booked on flights with this airline now that has gone under. What do they need to do?
They have to wait and hear what Aer Lingus are proposing. The contract with Aer Lingus means that they're going to get back to where they're supposed to, whether it be in England or in Ireland, and not an airport next door to it. They have to get back to exactly where they came from. Aer Lingus will be working. We've just heard Michael O'Leary offering his considerable fleet to bring them home. Some of the airports are served by Ryanair. Some of the smaller ones are not, but everybody will get to where they are supposed to. The aircraft are available. Aer Lingus's problem, it's Aer Lingus's problem, not theirs. And Aer Lingus's long-term problem is to, a longer-term or medium-term problem is to get another person, another airline in to look after those routes before Emirates Air take them up at the end of next year.
Okay. Okay, Eoin Corey, many thanks for that. And we'll take a break.
Tweet at Saturday RTE.
Now, the practice of getting political party activists to go door to door posing as independent pollsters to glean voter intentions has been in the spotlight since the Irish Independent broke the story earlier this week. Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and a number of other TDs have acknowledged that they engaged in this practice. All said this was historic from a time when politics was looser. However, the Independent is reporting today that activists were posing as researchers for the fictitious Irish Market Research Agency in the Dublin Midwest constituency for Sinn Féin as recently as late 2019, ahead of the by-election there. Louise O'Reilly, how does that square with what Eoin O'Brien has said on the record that we would have used it in advance of my 2016 election, that's in Dublin Midwest as well, but not in subsequent elections in Midwest?
So he was referring there to the use of identification badges. That's something that doesn't happen anymore. And I think, you know,
he definitely left that. If you left that that full interview with the impression that Sinn Féin had stopped this practice entirely by 2016.
Yeah, and I've listened to the interview and I think it was fairly clear that he was referring to the practice of using identification badges. That wasn't done prior to the 2016. That was done prior to the 2016 election and wasn't done subsequently. And from my read of the interview, that was what Eoin was referring to. But I think, you know, we need to acknowledge that there is, you know, that and understand that people have expressed a concern about this, and we need to be very clear we don't do that anymore. It is a historical practice, same for us as other parties.
Historical practice is late 2019. Is that history for us now?
These days we use polling companies, and, you know, we take those. I would receive
But this is a key point, because the Independent is reporting today that Sinn Féin would not respond to questions in relation to whether this practice occurred in the run up to the general election last year. So
Yeah, my understanding is it didn't, and that we use polling companies. So as a member of the party leadership, I would receive fairly regular updates in relation to professional polling companies and the results of those. So I think, you know, while we understand there has been an amount of disquiet, I think people need to understand that this is something that is done just to ascertain a general level of support within a certain constituency.
Yeah, you don't seem to have the Sinn Féin in their response this week didn't seem to have the same problem with this generally as other parties. Other parties are saying, look, it shouldn't have happened. It was the wrong thing to do. Do you believe it was the wrong thing to do?
I believe that I'm glad we don't do it anymore. The practice has ceased. We use professional polling companies and that gives us much more accurate information. As I said, I regularly get updates from the professional polling companies. That's what we do now. The issue of polling is an important one for political parties because we do need to be able to establish the levels of support and to monitor that.
Yeah, but, so that but is not through deception.
That is something that is done, as I said now, for Sinn Féin by professional polling companies and I'm quite happy with that.
Keane O'Callaghan.
Yeah, I think the fact that the practice has ceased is an admission by the different parties that were doing this that it is wrong and it was an underhand process.
I should say the Social Democrats are one of the few parties that were not engaged in this.
Yeah, no, certainly.
Yourselves and Labour, the two parties.
Yeah, we certainly have never been engaged in any sort of practice like this. And I think people have a legitimate right if you open up your door and someone says that they're from a polling company that they would actually be from a polling company and not from a political party. That's a legitimate expectation. And this does create problems, I think, for polling companies and their reputation, as it would for any industry, if someone else from a different sector comes along kind of impersonating people who are, and they are professional roles and professional organisations that polling companies do. So I think it's very positive that the practice is ceased. I think all the parties were engaged in it should be upfront and clear about when they ceased it, why they ceased it, and provide details on that. So we can move on to discussing.
Were you surprised at the revelation today that this was going on as late as 2019 in Dublin Midwest for Sinn Féin?
I was surprised just because having, you know, heard the previous comments, I had understood it to mean that it had been finished since 2016. But I think the important thing here is actually to close off on this and actually be able to get back to talking about the issues that really matter to people, you know, things around housing and healthcare, rather than these issues, which shouldn't be distracting from those kind of core issues.
Senator Mary Fitzpatrick issued a statement before it was acknowledged that Fianna Fáil, because originally Fianna Fáil said no, we didn't, practice like this in the party. And at that point, Mary Fitzpatrick issued a statement saying she was astounded and that people should be brought to account for this. And of course, Mark McSharry called for the guards to be involved.
Yeah, a couple of things, and I can understand.
Did you do it yourself, Sean?
Certainly not, never. And it's new. This is a new topic for me to hear about.
You never knew it was happening?
No. And I just this morning I spoke to the first person in the party who was involved in it. He said about 20 years ago, and he went out as a party volunteer. Those days, people didn't ask you what you. I'm just here doing a survey. He had no ID suggesting it from anywhere else. He wasn't asked, who are you from? I'm doing a survey. The ones that he told me that Fianna Fáil were involved in, they didn't have any personal details. They went to, knocked on doors at random housing estates or villages or towns. They didn't have the voters register. They didn't even have the name of the people who lived in the house when they knocked on the door to do the poll. So there was no personal information. They just came back and said, we polled 400 people and here are the results. Secondly, the reason why people in Fianna Fáil might be confused on it is it stopped 13 or 14 years ago and they might have known what happened in those days. But what we have here this morning is admission from Sinn Féin that within a month or so of the last general election, they were doing it. So if they were doing it in November at the very end of 2019, there's no reason to believe they weren't doing it in January the following year, a month or so later, which was the last general election. And that will have to be clarified. We have put our hands up. Practice stopped 2007, many, many years ago. Sinn Féin have said they were doing it right up to the recent general election.
No, we said it was up to the by-election, Sean, and I think, you know,
which was just a few months beforehand.
There's quite an amount of embarrassment among the ranks of Fianna Fáil at the hysterical overreaction of some of their reps to this and the statements indeed that were issued and then obviously couldn't be retracted. But as I've said, it was a bit amateurish on our behalf. We acknowledge that. We acknowledge the concerns. Absolutely. People do have a right to know. It's not best practice. We don't do it anymore. We use professional polling companies now. But I think what we don't need to lose sight of, and Keane is right, you know, there are other issues that we can and should be discussing. These are issues that
indeed,
are coming
and
up.
Indeed, and we will do that. And just ask you one question from
from a listener, Frank, texts in to ask, do these revelations mean Sinn Féin and other annotated electoral roll databases include my voting intentions?
The polling is very, very different. So when you do a poll, it has to be anonymous. Absolutely no data is collected in relation to the person that you are talking about. Polling is anonymous. It's the same as when it's done by professional polling companies. The anonymity is important. It's important to get...
But you see, I think, isn't the difficulty that if people realise they were lied to once, they may have concerns about what was then done with the information that they give, thinking they were giving this information to an independent company.
OK, so the information is used for the purpose of polling. So the person's name, exactly as Sean has just outlined there, their name is not recorded, their address is not recorded. So it's, you know, it's very much specific to the poll. So what, you know, what is done is the same as is done for other marketing companies. You get a broad spectrum of the population, okay, and you ask them questions about their voting intentions, and that's all you get. You don't ask names, or you don't record addresses. That's not what it's for. It's for a snapshot of the political picture within the constituency. But I do want
it would
to
be a handy way to find out other information.
I do want to
well.
Acknowledge. I don't think that it would. I think the purpose of a poll is very specific, and what you do, you want to find out a snapshot of the voting intentions, okay, a snapshot of okay. how you think people are going to vote. But I think it's important. We do acknowledge that people have had concerns. I think people need to understand it's not a practice that we engage in anymore. Okay. It's something okay. that we had done.
You've made the
we
point.
Don't do it anymore.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. We'll move on, because as the vaccination programme continues apace, thoughts are turning to returning to the workplace, and with the Taoiseach signalling this week that this could happen earlier than anticipated in August. Sean Fleming, is the government working on a plan to ensure that offices and other places of work are going to be safe places to return to?
Absolutely. And the protocol has already been established within the public service that people will ultimately have the option of working maybe 20% of the time at home. So that will be a reduction of 20% of the number of people in offices. At the moment, we're talking about a phased return. Hopefully it'll start in August when people will be in holidays. People can see how it's working when there's a reduced number, such that when we get back to September, we'll have all the teething problems ironed out. So the government has a major role to play in this in government buildings, but the private sector has a big role to play in as well. So I think...
Will the HSA be involved in terms of inspecting premises?
The answer to that is I don't know yet. That's something that I think is a fair question to put. It hasn't been considered at government level. The issue of the resources and ability to do that is very important. But what I would hope in the private sector, that the private sector companies will be very vigilant. We've seen the difficulties in the meat industry in the past, and that has they're very close monitoring there. But in relation to the public service, I think between the public sector employees and management in the public service, I wouldn't expect any problems to occur in that area.
We're reading this morning again that if you're not vaccinated, that you won't be discriminated against. Yeah. You will also be able to return to the workplace without having to declare whether or not you have taken the jab. Is that going to be difficult for employers to navigate that? And will this have implications for continued mask wearing and maintaining the 2 metre rule?
It will have all of those things, because I think most people would be comfortable. One of the things about Ireland, the take-up of the vaccination rate in Ireland is way higher than other countries. And I think that's something we should be proud of. And those people who are doing it, the vast, vast majority, would like to know the colleague beside them has been vaccinated. But they have their privacy rights. So this is an issue that is now going to emerge, and it's going to be a difficult one to solve, because people, especially in certain sectors like the healthcare sector, or if you have a carer reminding you, you would like to know that person was vaccinated.
Indeed, yeah. Cian, another question that has arisen this week is the announcement from Facebook that it's going to allow its employees or a certain number of its employees to work from home or indeed from their home countries. And we know that other, in particular the tech giants, Google and Twitter, have also made similar announcements. This could have a massive impact, couldn't it, on our FDI situation?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of implications on it around tax, around, you know, social security benefits, employment rights, all of those things kick in. I think it also, in terms of, you know, competing for investment and competing for workforce, brings in issues around things like, you know, high rents, you know, quality of life, facilities and amenities in our cities and towns. And, you know, if we continue on a path where we have, you know, some of the highest rents and highest house prices in Western Europe, and we're effectively competing to try and hold some of our workforce from companies that are based here compared to other locations in Western Europe, you know, that's going to you know, go against us. So I think it's another reason why we need to work as hard as we can to try and you know, get housing affordability into our housing supply, for example.
And I see the Tánaiste again reported today saying that tax issue is the high level of personal taxes here is going to be something that has to be faced up to.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised that he took that angle, because it kind of very much reflects his values and the way he would look at this. But I actually think it's issues around what we invest into third level education. It's what we're doing in terms of investing into affordable housing. It's quality of life. It's how our public services are. That's where we're going to be able to attract people and hold people, rather than you know, trying to have a race to the bottom in terms of taxation and then obviously our public services you know, being weakened as a result of that.
Yeah, Louise O'Reilly.
Yeah, I think the key for the retention of staff has to be understanding that we have a cost of living crisis in this state. It's obviously led by unaffordable housing, indeed, and insecure housing. It's something that the pandemic has shown up. A lot of people living in precarious housing situations, living in overcrowded housing situations. And I think, you know, when you talk to people in business, and I do, obviously, as part of my portfolio all of the time, they will tell you that there are real barriers faced by workers in terms of affordability of housing,
okay,
in particular.
And then when you hear, yeah, but in that line, then when you hear Facebook making the announcement it made this week, that could have, or should we be seriously worried about the implications that could have on our economy if their workers make decisions based on all those issues you just...
Well, shouldn't we not? Shouldn't that not spur the government to tackle the cost of living crisis, Katie? Because I think, you know, we need to see action from the government in terms of the affordability of renting. It is almost impossible for people to afford the rent in Dublin City without crowding into apartments, and, you know, overcrowding is becoming absolutely rife. These people have no prospect of being able to own their own homes because they simply are working to pay their rent. So when we talk about, you know, the future of work, and when we talk about how people are going to live, we need to look at work as a driver for our high streets and our main streets, as a driver for business activity in our local communities, but also look at our city centre and ways that we can retain the vitality that we have in our city centre, make them vibrant, make our city a livable city, and ensure that people can live in the city, because at the moment they simply can't.
Sean Fleming, a lot of chickens may be coming home to roost here.
Well, no, it's just the society and the world we live in, and I personally raised this matter with the IDA last autumn, well, 6 or 8 months ago, because I saw this coming down the track, because in my job I met with the chief executive of one of the major banks, foreign banks in Ireland, who have 2,000 employees here, and I asked about working from home, and she said they had 60 different nationalities working for them here in Dublin, and said, where are they now? They're gone home. And she said they were already watching and developing the issue in relation to their where they pay their income tax if they're resident outside the state, the employment law that they'll be subject to if they're not resident here. So these are issues that are evolving. And, you know, I think Ireland is... The nature of Ireland, we're a good, well-educated workforce, we're within the EU, and I think we'll be well able to hold our own despite these difficulties.
Okay. I've only got a minute left, but I do want to touch on this because it's a huge issue for thousands of families across the West and the Northwest, the Pyrite and Mica scandal. I understand that Micheál Martin, it wasn't well publicised, but that he did meet some victims of this scandal when he was on his way up to Fermanagh for that G7.
Yeah, he did. And I just saw it myself after the event that he was on Facebook, a picture on Facebook with Charlie McConlogue at some of the houses, which were very important. It wasn't a big media event. He wanted to go and see firsthand what was actually involved. There's a very big grant scheme available, up to 90%. I know
not
people,
good enough, people no, are saying, and no, Sinn Féin have a motion on this.
Well,
on Tuesday, there's going to be a massive protest. What kind of reassurances was he able to give them now?
Well, what we're saying, the Cabinet will on Tuesday decide its response to the actual motion in the Dáil the coming week. But I think starting from a point that there's grants up to 90% is a very good starting point.
Louise,
100% redress is what these families are calling for. Their homes are literally crumbling down around them. People in Mayo, Donegal and Clare deserve 100% redress. And let's not forget, it was light touch regulation by previous Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael governments that have led them to this situation. It is not the fault
of the families. And some members of the Euro Party built some of these apartment blocks that were we're talking
the fault
about
of
now.
The family. And you know well who I'm talking about. They should
when
be held.
One voice.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm telling you now. It is the government's responsibility to ensure that they grant 100% redress.
Are you going to support?
To the families?
Is Social Democrats going to support this motion?
No, absolutely. There must be 100% redress for the families here. But the point about regulating industry and testing building suppliers and controlling that properly is very, very important. There's €1 billion cost to the taxpayer on this, and then there's going to be pyrite, and there's the fire safety defects. Okay. So letting builders and suppliers away with this continuously is hugely costly and has to be stopped.
It has to be tackled. Okay, we leave that there. The programme was produced by Mary O'Hagan. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Tommy Sullivan was on sound. I want to thank my panel and thank you all for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Saturday with Katie Hannan. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.